Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm your host, Darren Bresnitz. It is my absolute pleasure today to be in Philadelphia chatting with Alex Kemp, the chef and co-owner of My Lou, talk to this fellow Canadian about his culinary adventures, the time he spent in Montreal, San Francisco, New York, and eventually winding up in the city of brotherly love. We talk about his restaurant, which recently was on one of Eater's hot new restaurants in America, the work that he's done with chef, partner, wife, Amanda Schulman, and what one can expect when they go to the restaurant that's a little dark, a little loud, and absolutely perfect for the night out. And then it's a dive into the archives where we chat with Miami Drive. They talk about how food was their first passion before music, their unique approach to writing songs, and their deep love for their sunny roots in South Florida. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on Heritage Radio Network.
Thank you.
Alex, welcome to Snacky Tunes. It's not only great to check in with Philadelphia, but fellow Canadian, cooked at some of my favorite restaurants of all time in Montreal. It's a pleasure to have you on the show. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thanks, Darren. Fired up to be here, and go Habs, go.
Go Habs, go. Well, I mean, go Flyers, but the Flyers, it's tough.
Chili love.
It's tough. You know, speaking of Canada, you grew up in a small town. What was it like growing up? Was food a big part of it? You know, because I know you got into restaurants really early. So mom cooked, dad cooked, grandparents. What was the scene like in your house?
You know what? It's not the usual picturesque chefs, you know, where I watch my grandma cook.
Sure.
I grew up with a single mother and, you know, we moved around a lot. I grew up on the Quebec side and my family on my mother's side and father's side, they're both fully Quebecois. So it was not so much cooking. It was more, I was around like the party. So Christmas in my house, people are drinking wine, you know, having a glass of wine at 14, you got the mussels, you got the duck, and it was not cooked necessarily well. I don't remember the flavors, but I just remember the feeling of being
sure
in a party and being around people you love.
Is that party, because you said 14 and that's when you started getting into restaurants, was it that vibe that got you into restaurants, or was it like just necessity?
I started cooking at 14, 15. I started off as a dishwasher and I love the rush of like being around a bunch of people and the rush of service and the hustle and bustle and, you know, everyone like kind of hangs out after and this camaraderie. And I thought it was so cool, but you know, I didn't know what I wanted to do for a long time. And school was tough because I was always a bright kid, but I just didn't love the structure and the classroom setting, I guess you could say. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're in this small town, but you eventually wind up in arguably one of the best restaurant cities in the world, Montreal. It's where my dad is from. And I feel like even I growing up, you know, I go to Schwartz's and then, you know, I went to like Au Pied de Cochon and started going all to the new spots. And that's when you were like in that era of cooking. What was the scene like? Like, I know that like Bourdain sort of made it more famous than it was at the time, but you were actually living it.
I think to really like to touch base on Montreal, you really have to start probably a year or two beforehand. I was living in the Canadian Rockies and I was working at this hotel. And back then I thought, you know, hotel restaurants and, you know, just thing in Canada called the Red Seal, which really doesn't mean much, but
sure.
I thought the hotels were where I needed to be, but I had this weird gut feeling that I needed to go work at this restaurant called 18, in Ottawa. And I flew on a whim. My aunts were living there at the time. I flew on a whim and I staged and did not get the job, but I was moving to Ottawa regardless. And I flew back and I knocked on the door every day for a week. And what makes that restaurant so special is that like when I worked there, it was the first time that I worked in like a fine dining restaurant. But the team there was really, really special. There was a guy named Steve who ended up being the head chef at St. John. We were all cooks together. There was a guy, Ben Ng was the chef at Noma for a while. And three or four other people ended up doing really big things. The wine guy worked for Bastianich for a long time. So it was a really special thing. But after that, I decided I needed to stage. I needed to go to the U.S. I had never been to the U.S. really up until I was 17 or 18. So you know a guy named Chris Cosentino? You know Chris?
Of course.
Yeah, so I emailed Chris. Yeah. I remember on my BlackBerry. I would email him every day because all my friends wanted to go to Danielle and all my friends wanted to go to French Laundry.
Sure.
You know, the cookbooks are beautiful and those restaurants are great, but I wanted to go somewhere and be different. I always wanted to be different. So
yeah.
So I emailed Chris and I never forget it. I was on the city bus on the way to 18 one day and I get an email from Chris. My heart stopped. Oh, well, fuck, Chris calls
TV. Yeah.
So he says, sure, come stage, but if you're not good, we can fire you.
You're like, no pressure.
But yeah, I mean,
that was the time back then though, right? You could just be just show up every day, show up every day, and then get in the door and you prove yourself.
It was fucking cool. And I remember I was like, you know, I didn't tell my family. I was enrolled in culinary school at the time and I just dropped out of culinary school. I was like, fuck it. I'm going to go for a month to San Francisco, work for free, work for Chris. And the reason I bring the story up before Montreal is that, I went there and, you know, I showed up in jean shorts and a Montreal Expos t-shirt. I'll never forget it. And I sat down at the bar, never been to America, was 18 years old, 19 years old, couldn't even drink. And I ate the whole menu just to show Chris like that I could eat. Like I'm here, like I'm ready to show up, right? And you know what? I ended up working there 6 days a week for 4 weeks. I was cooked by the end of it. I was cooked by the end of it. But he was the one that reached out to Martin Picard and got me the job at
Got it.
De Cochon. So when I came back from that, when I came back from America and being at Encanto, which is a really special restaurant.
So special.
I loved it. For me, I was like, I've changed my life. I'll never forget. It's like I'm chasing the dragon, you know, and they say, when they talk about drugs, when I ate a tomato in San Francisco for the first time at that young, I still have never tasted a tomato that delicious.
I mean, you're hitting on all, you know, that era and that time, the conversation really between like San Francisco, Montreal, New York. I feel like those three cities were talking to each other and having such strong relationships in both cooking and who's going back and forth. And it was, to me, in America, like that was, I mean, Chicago was having a moment too, but I felt like that triangle of Montreal, San Francisco, New York, everyone was swapping, everyone was talking, you know, Offal was really coming in, Snap to Tail Cooking, all that type of stuff. And you talk about Opie de Cachan, and I remember going up there and also being, you're at Cabane à Sucre. And eating there as well, just being like so decadent, so lively, but also like a party, a vibe. And I get what you're saying, because fine dining and high end was like quiet, muted, white tablecloths, and then to like be like, it was rollicking.
That was the era when things were starting to change. I feel like, you know, I was so young, but you know, all these things that have happened for a reason. Like the year that I was at Cabane, like you said, it was so like crazy. We were working, we were doing like 2,000 covers a week. Like,
yeah,
it's 45 minutes, 50 minutes outside the city. But like the year I was there, Bourdain did his like Parts Unknown there.
Yeah.
And it was just like, everything was just so cool. And Vincent, who's Vincent Dion-Lavallée, who's huge in Montreal now, was there. And the dish I did there, and this dish that I had to do. So you go there and you do a dish, and I had to do this. I was paired up with this guy from New York, a guy named Danny Newberg, who's a good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And we had to do this chicken. You're going to laugh. This classic. A chicken, okay, that was stuffed with cottaquino sausage, caramelized onions, foie gras, lobster. And then we made a lobster stock, blended it with equal parts clarified butter, injected the bird, roasted the bird, took the drippings, and make an egg yolk sauce, like an egg yolk, like a thickened with egg yolk sauce in the Thermomix every day for 3 months.
I mean, listen, if I remember how I felt after the meal there, that typifies the type of dishes. And it was just such an experience. And you could just feel you could feel, I mean, you know, to even talk about the technique behind it, you could go in and be like, we're just going to blast this thing with like fat and flavor and things like that. But it's like, no, like the base is really, really traditional type of like French cooking technique.
Very, very much so.
And like very old school, very old world type of cooking as well. And so I know that you're in Montreal and you're in this scene, and you hadn't been to New York yet. So what actually made you want to get down to the city? Like after being in San Francisco, after being in Montreal, what pulled you out of Canada again?
Well, I went to Joe Beef after that, and that was like a really eye-opening experience because Marco, who's like probably
shout out, love him.
He's definitely a mentor. Yeah, he's the best. And he like just the way he cooked was like so light and so there was that balance of light and like the way he plates, and you know, that was eye-opening. And then I worked at Van Papillon, and then I had a girlfriend at the time who moved to Halifax. And you know, I don't know why, I guess everything happens for a reason. I moved to Halifax and, you know, I was alone there. I hadn't had that many friends. So I just I started buying cookbooks, and I got the 11 Madison Park cookbook.
Sure.
And back then it was like, you remember when that came out, it was so sick.
It's sitting on my shelf in the other room. Yeah. Like
classic. And I said, you know, fuck it. I'm going to book a flight and I'm going to stage at 4 or 5 places. But that's the job I wanted. And I just kind of went on my own, and just like 18, I just took a flight and with a backpack, and I just, I came to New York, and I'd never been to New York before. So I was there on my own. So that's kind of crazy. And go ahead.
No, I was saying you were there at a really special time too. I mean, that was also when New York was changing.
Best.
Because I was there too, and you could just feel it in the air. And 11 Madison Park and going out to those fine dining meals wasn't what it is today. Like even if you were like working and grinding it out, you could still afford to go there. I mean, it was like special. But then you had things opening up like Sambar and Co. And I know that you spent time working in those restaurants. What was it like to go from like the Montreal scene that was happening, the New York scene that was happening? Yeah. Like how much in the conversation did you feel and like that you actually had influence of like what was going on in the culinary scene?
Well, one thing I find about, you know, working at EMP was a huge eye opening experience for me. The one thing that I found, the first thing I noticed, it's funny you ask, is that like when I got there, like I knew how to cook.
Sure.
Like I knew how to like bang out like dude at Joe Beaver is fucking busy, man. And I'm cooking. We don't have like a prep team in the morning doing our peas, like, or chucking our fava beans or peeling our, you know, whatever. Like, you're doing everything yourself. Mm-hmm, and that's one thing. That was at the time when America started switching and the prep became completely different. So there was this massive team. There's 50 cooks in the kitchen and everything was so beautiful. And I said, you know, honestly, Darren, I looked at myself and said, what the fuck am I doing here? But then, and
it's
for the first
time, those moments in life, it's good to have those moments.
Yeah. But when it came to like making family meal or came to make like cooking or like making something on the fly, like I could do it. And I knew that I could hang with the best of them. I don't care if someone worked there for years because I could cook. I know, you know, that's a huge thing. So, that's the one thing I noticed. And then the first 2 months were really, really rough. And I just remember thinking to myself, like, dude, like we'd prep like four quarts, like they prep like a quart of sauce for service. And I was like, that's so easy. And at Joe Beef, we'd do like 9 quarts of sauce. But then I realized that 1 quart of sauce, if it's not absolutely perfect, you get in trouble and you have to redo it. So it's like, it's just a different restaurant. Like it's same, but
different. It's same, but it's different. And, I think back then too, is that there came to be this shared respect that you could be at a Joe Beef doing this type of restaurant or Vin Papillon or Co or Sambar or like a Dirt Candy. Like everyone was like pulling from the same like place of respect and you know, with like fresh vegetables, thinking about the way that restaurants could be and developing into the future of like what the next generation, the next chapter of spots were going to look like. And you got to be there when some of the old rules are being thrown out. How much did that inspire you when you finally started thinking about like, maybe one day I would open up my own spot?
I to be honest, I always knew that I would never open up anything remotely close to an 11 Madison Park. Not because it's like,
you didn't have a few million in the bank.
Yeah. I don't have tens of millions of dollars. Right. So back then it's just funny how people changed. Like I was 21 years old, 22 years old. Mm-hmm. And, like the most important thing to me was like, wearing that badge on my chest and working at the best restaurant. And like, and, you know, I thought that was so important back then. But I just completely changed. I did Fine Dining for 4 years afterwards and I kind of getting off track here. I don't remember where.
No, it was just, I was talking about when you start thinking about having your own spot, and I'm glad you actually brought up the fine dining thing, because having that fundamental, and you talked about it from the very beginning of like going, cooking, starting young, working your way up. And knowing that you could do fine dining, you could brunoise all day if you want, you know, but like going out and having that base and starting to do your own thing gives you that freedom to be like, I could do fine dining, but I want to take those skills and put it somewhere else.
Yeah. I just came back to me. What I really took away from it. Sorry, the answer machine is going on behind me, but, was systems was so important, because systems and attitude and camaraderie and teamwork and seasoning, those are the five things I took away from working at a place like that. Excel, it sounds ridiculous, but Excel spreadsheets for prep lists and stuff like that, it does make a difference. And the way you store things and how clean it looks, and it all adds up, you know, it makes your life a lot easier if it's efficient.
Yeah. But I think it's putting in that time and then also seeing like, we have structure, we cut the tape, we don't rip it, you know, setting all those things up and learning those fine little things when you get into service and when you get it up and how it starts in the back of the house and works its way to the front, it does influence the customer's experiences. So even 100%. If it's, and I know that you and Amanda have built these places that feel like homey and casual and things like that, but it is resting on this foundation
100%.
Of like, you know, top Michelin star restaurants.
Structure.
All right. I want to take a quick musical break. And then when I come back, I want to talk about when you start thinking about Philadelphia, my Lou, her place, Separate Club, and then also the music that you play at the restaurant. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network.
Oh,
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I'm here with Chef Alex Kemp, co-owner of My Lou, and you're in New York City. You're cooking at all these incredible restaurants. And I know you made it back to Montreal at some point to cook with Marc Olivier and work with Vanya at Mon Lapin. But when did Philadelphia start coming into an idea of a spot that you would want to set up shop?
So it was Amanda and I were together for about 3 or 4 years at this point. The pandemic hit and she moved back to Connecticut before moving eventually to Philadelphia, because her visa ended in Canada. Mm-hmm. I always knew I wanted to come back to the US. I love living in the US. I think it's the best. But I ended up coming back to the US and working privately in the Hamptons during COVID. So that was a nice break. And Amanda was, you know, opening her place Supper Club in Philadelphia. And like I said, I moved around a lot as a kid, so I don't really have like roots anywhere. And I guess my roots were kind of with Amanda. So, I made the move to Philadelphia. I always liked it. I love sports. I love,
great sports.
I love the blue collar, hardworking. Everyone's just no bullshit in Philadelphia. And, that really attracted me. So when Amanda opened her place Supper Club, it was kind of the natural progression that I couldn't live in the Hamptons forever. So, and I had my fill of the Hamptons, spent 2 winters in the Hamptons. So I'm Hamptoned out for a little bit. But so I made the move to Philadelphia.
And so what was your role? I mean, obviously you were partners in life and now you're married, but you know, it's one thing to be partners in life, it's another thing to be working in a restaurant together and sharing the business part of your life. How did you find that balance? Was the goal that you would help support there and then eventually open up your own spot? How did that all unfold?
You know, back then it was like, there was so much uncertainty with everything, you know? But you know, everyone always asked Amanda and I, like, how do you guys do it? How do you work together? How do you live together? Like Amanda is literally it's kind of cheesy, but she's my best friend. Like we work out together.
I love it.
We live together. We work together. And it's never been, you know, we definitely know our lanes and we stay in our lanes. Like there's things that I know she knows how to do. And there's things that I know how to do that she doesn't know how to do. And kind of complimented each other well like that. But when she you know, it's always kind of an understanding that I had to take a back seat while she opened up her place Supper Club. And she created this really special restaurant. It's so unique and so amazing. And I kind of had to be like an emotional like support. I don't want to say dog, but you know, I was just there for her. So my best idea is a partner. Exactly. So I would help her write menus. And when I first moved to Philadelphia, or just have at least she would call and just vent to me. At the time I was in the Hamptons. So when she first opened, but when I moved back, I worked there for the 4 or 5 months and, you know, we've never really gotten in a big argument about food. and it's just always been seamless. And what she's done over at her place, she's so talented. It's kind of insane.
It's insane. And it's just like
all off her own hands. And yeah, she did it. You know, she didn't create this big fancy restaurant when it took out, you know, $1 million investment. She did it with nothing and she's built this thing from the ground up, which is unheard of nowadays, you know?
Yeah. And I think it is a sort of return, you know, after that era of big restaurants and so much money coming in and owing so much to investors. I think in the post pandemic, it was just like, well, how do we open? How do we plan? What's a work life balance? Like, how do we approach running a restaurant that isn't going to put us back to right where we were before we knew all the problems, before we were talking about them, but now we all really know what the problems are of working in the restaurant business with burnout and mental health and things like that. And let's create a place that puts up great food and has great cooking, but doesn't completely define our lives.
I gotta tell you, like, I agree with a lot of stuff too, but like, you know, I fucking love restaurants and I love the restaurant industry. And what Amanda has done over her place is she works her ass off. She treats everyone well. She works everyone well. But you know what? It's fucking hard. And like restaurants are always going to be hard.
Sure.
Finance is hard. Real estate's hard. You know, waste management's hard. Everything's hard. But like sometimes I feel like restaurants sometimes get villainized a little bit when it's like giving so many people from other countries, including myself, I'm an immigrant or from lower means of education or whatever it is. And it's giving people so many different opportunities and a life. You know, do you agree with that or no?
I agree with that. And I agree that 100%. I mean, listen, when my dad would come down to like the Catskills in the 70s and work as a waiter from Montreal. And that was, you know, him working in the States and things like that.
So cool.
And I've always thought that restaurants was a great way to find an anchor in a different country and things like that. I think more to the way that restaurants used to be run. And, you know, I know that with like Her Place and My Lou, like you guys don't, you aren't open on Saturday and Sundays, and it's giving you like a work-life balance. I think it's bringing in a little bit more of that idea of just like, what can this lifestyle be? It's so hard, but like, hard, we don't have to work to the point where we're killing ourselves all the time.
Yeah, all the time.
Just
6.5 days a week.
And I want to get to My Lou because you're at Her Place Supper Club. It's such a success, national recognition, all the awards. When did you start thinking like, could there be a sibling restaurant? Could we open up another spot that would be in conversation together? You know, Does that make sense, or do I need to go break off and do my own thing? Like, how did you start formulating that idea?
Well, we started looking at spaces, but it kind of started on like our third date there. And we were on a date in the East Village. And I started talking about this restaurant.
Yeah.
This restaurant's good. It's like loud. It's too dark. It's a little too loud. The wine's flowing. The oysters are on ice. The music's bumping. That's the type of place where you think you're going to spend $50 and you get a check and it's, let's say, 70, but you're just like, you know what? That was fucking sick. And I'm going to come back and the vibe's there and the staff they care and it's hospitable. And when I spoke to Amanda about this, you know, almost 7 years now, 6 years ago, her eyes glazed over and I knew I always tell the story. It's right then and there that I knew like, okay, we're in love. Like, this is it. And so we started looking at spaces for a different concept. And then we found what is now My Lou, and we walked in and we both just looked at each other and we said, this is it. So the idea was always kind of, she would open her baby and then my baby would be second. I guess our baby.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, once we walked in, we knew this was going to be it.
And you two decided to open it together. And I know we talked about a little bit of the balance of the hours of the restaurant, but what is it like running? I mean, Her Place Supper Club is like such a high profile place now. And then opening up another restaurant almost on the heels of it, being a success and established and getting all the national recognition. What was the structure like? How do you guys run it? Like, how do you find that time to approach both?
We're so lucky that we both have different skill sets. So when it comes to the actual, like the food and the day to day, I'm definitely, I had it here because it would just be too much. But when it comes to everything else and bouncing ideas or the business side of things, Amanda's my support in that sense. So we do everything together. We bounce everything off together, but it actually works out perfectly. Like in the mornings, you know, we'll go for a run together or to take our dog Tootsie for a walk or something. Mm. But we kind of split. It's funny because they're like two blocks away from each other. So she'll go right, I go left. And then we kind of start our day. And then, you know, she'll stop in, you know, twice a day. But we kind of just stay in our lanes and it's pretty special. It's really fucking cool, man.
I mean, it's so special, and you've really created these special home spots that really do feel like homes and lived in for both like friends and families and people coming to town. And I know part of that, a big part of that is the cooking, because you've been able to take all these things starting from when you were like such a young kid getting started through your times in San Francisco, New York, London, Montreal, Philadelphia. How have you filtered it all? Because when I was reading about the raw bar, I was like, oh, I could see the Joe Beef raw bar.
Yeah.
Your interpretation of that at your spot. So like, how did you filter everything so it feels cohesive?
It's just, everything is just like, well, if we're talking about just the food or the restaurant, like the food.
Let's talk about the food first, we'll talk about the design. Yeah.
Yeah. The food is very much like, so it's tough. Like, I'm sure every chef will tell you when you open your first restaurant, like it's my first time owning a restaurant. So it's sure. I'm so conscious of like not stealing ideas. So it's like, or I don't want to be that guy that's like taking ideas from other people. So sometimes that's kind of a roadblock, but it kind of just happens naturally. Like the restaurant we opened, in May is not the restaurant that it is now. And the restaurant in July of next year won't be the restaurant it is now. It's just like always evolving. But yeah, I definitely take like different parts from each restaurant. Like I think when you come to My Lou and you get the seafood tower, it is elaborate. It is massive. It is a meal on its own. And I think that like, everything here, I always tell the cooks, and they make fun of me behind my back for sure, and to my face. But everything's abundant. Everything's abundant. Everything's generous. Everything's warm. Everything has intention. Everything is just like not just like giving you a small bite of something on a little white tablecloth. Like it's like when you're coming to My Lou, you're at our house, and we're gonna fucking crush you, unless you don't want to be crushed.
Yeah,
which I think it's so cool.
Yeah, you can have the option. I mean, I definitely the crushing of the guests and friends is definitely,
we have to read the table. So what we do is we have this thing called Let Us Cook For You on the menu, which is pretty cool. And our servers here and the staff here and our management team here are so good. And after like being opened maybe 2 months, you know, I was going to do a classic tasting menu where we had a set menu, you know, yeah, print up every day. And then, you know what? I thought to myself, I talked to Amanda and I said, the servers here are the best, in my opinion, around. And I think that we should give them the power to write the menus. So when you say crush, the server can, if it's an older couple from Rittenhouse that don't want to get crushed, they read the table and we just do less, or we do maybe more like more acid based or like less butter sauce. And like, I don't know, like I could be have an ego and be a chef and be like, no, they get the fucking foie gras and this, that. But you know what? I don't know. Like, I don't know. Maybe, you know, Kristen or Alyssa or Jill are talking to one of the guests. They know more than me what the guests want.
And maybe it is like a little raw bar, a lighter salad, a nice fish, chicken, something like that, dessert, and they walk out. It's that personal touch. And I know that going back to the design of the spot, like that is like feeling home, that neighborhood spot, and, you know, which feels so great. And you have this library wall that has all these personal touches and all these like different tchotchkes. I'd love to hear about like how the design reflects and supports this approach to service and like treating everyone as an individual at the restaurant, not to be like, you come down, everyone gets the same experience.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's kind of a complicated answer. As you can see, I'm sometimes a little long winded here, but the shout out Cano Design. First of all, they really helped us out when we opened. They're awesome. And the idea of the bookshelf was like, I don't want to go into a cookie cutter restaurant. Mm-hmm. Everything in this restaurant is not cookie cutter. So let's say the service you get when we hired every server and with our general manager, we spoke, we said, I don't want, hello, how are you? Like, what can I get this evening? Some people that's fine. But I was like, I want you to talk to the guests. And like, I want, like I said earlier, everything has intention. The way we speak to people, the way how are you? Like, where did you come from? Like, welcome. And the wall itself is just like such a nice touch when you sit down in that back room and the music's flowing and you got the candles lit and you look up and you see a picture of, you know, me and my grandmother or Amanda's parents or you know, our nephews. It's like, it just adds to the experience. I know it sounds cheesy, but it's just like you're in there and maybe there's a Montreal Canadiens thing and a Buffalo Bills thing on the wall. And then, you know, it's like, it's just so cool. It's so cool.
And special place, man. People want, they want that special thing. And listen, like I know there's a lot of talk now about like finding 5 or 6 restaurants, if that many, just supporting them and making that as like, I'm coming here once a month or I'm coming here 3 times a week or something like that. And it can't be cookie cutter anymore. It can't just be like, all right, pick out of these 12 designs. It's got to feel like you're entering someone's spot. And I know that earlier you had talked about, you know, a dark space, a little too loud, Fleetwood Mac on the stereo. What's the music that people can expect? What's the vibe when people are walking in now, especially as we head into like the colder, dark winter days of Philadelphia?
So I'll tell you, Darren, the music here is very, very all over the place. So, but it's very much like, it's like, I don't want to say an orchestra, it's so tacky, but it's like when you come in at 5 o'clock, maybe there's Motown playing, you know, maybe there's something softer playing, but you know what? You come back here at 9:30, 10 o'clock at night and you have people singing Celine Dion out of their straws. And we've had more than one time the whole restaurant doing karaoke, like singing together to Whitney Houston, to all kinds of different songs you would not normally see in a restaurant, because I want the guests to feel good. It's not necessarily, we don't play music necessarily that like I think is cool or what I, obviously I have to like the music. It's not like the hits like from the 2020s, but it's like, I want the guests to enjoy the music. And I want them to enjoy what they're listening to.
I mean,
just Backstreet Boys. I don't care. Sometimes you're the Backstreet Boys. I know it's not like cool, but I don't really care.
Sometimes it's fine. I mean, that's the great thing I love about Philly, and you mentioned that as well, is that like there is this blue collar, like there are times when there is no pretension and like it's just like, this is just the song we want to hear and we want to belt it out loud and just like embrace the city, embrace the brotherhood.
If you don't like it, it's like people are, you know how Philly is. You don't like it, you don't have to be here. It's like,
if you don't like it, you can, there's the fucking door, you know?
Exactly.
So you're a few months in, and I know you talked about like the restaurant's gonna be different in July and things like that, but what excites you the most about the media and like the distant future of My Lou?
The team and the food growing. The kitchen team here is so good. And I'm just excited to keep cooking. And like I said earlier, like the reason the restaurant changes is the recipes get improved. Our ideas get improved. The cooks and my sous chefs, Jake and Sage, they start to learn like our repertoire, I guess you could say. And then everyone starts to build on it. Like you can't come into a restaurant and just create dishes when you've never worked. Like we've only been open 6 months, but now I have a cook. I have this girl, Danielle, she's 23 years old. I'll tell you a quick story. She, she's like bringing dishes ideas to me, and she's so impressive. This girl started cooking meats 2 weeks ago, okay? And Darren, last Friday, two months ago, and last Friday, I look over Darren, and she's got quails on the grill. She's got three different cuts of beef. She's got a half chicken. She's cooking two different fish and a halibut tail. 22 years old. And that is what I'm excited about. I'm excited about the team growing, because if the team grows and then the wine list improves, Noah's, shout out Noah, he's the best. And the bar program with Jill and everything's just getting better. And I know sometimes you're in like a rabbit hole and you think that the restaurant's not improving, but you know, you look back and you're like, holy shit, like last May, we had no idea what we were doing, which I still don't, but it's just so cool to see everything evolve.
No, and you can tell what a special place. And I know I haven't been back to Philly since you opened, but I can't wait to come in. And you can just,
you got
to
come in.
I know. I could just, you know, what you and Amanda are doing is, and the whole team is so special. If people want to come in and visit, people just want to see what you guys are doing and things like that, or snag a reservation. I know you guys are big on walk-ins. Where can they go? How can they come check out the spot?
Check out Resy for reservations. They do book out 30 days in advance. Yeah. So I direct, it's ever since the recent media, it's been pretty busy, but we always leave about, you know, maybe 20% for walk-ins, but it gets busy, man. It's hard. There's only so many seats. And I know Amanda sometimes gets some slack for not having reservations, but there's only so many seats, you know, it's tough. We're so lucky.
That's the flip side of Philly too. You know, it's the people who, you know, it's how it goes.
Yeah, yeah.
Listen, congratulations to you also. Congratulations on the wedding. It looked beautiful. And
thanks, I appreciate that.
In the summer. Shout out to all of the friends in Montreal as well. And we have a song from the archives and then a live performance here on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network.
This time, this time, this time, this time, this time, this time. Hi, listeners. We wanted to let you know that Heritage Radio Network's Julia Child Fellowship application is now open. The fellowship offers an enriching experience for aspiring food writers and journalists who share our passion for food systems change. The fellowship is a great way to progress in the field of food journalism and digital media and will start in early January 2024. This fellowship will provide participants with hands-on experience, mentorship, and access to an extensive network of industry professionals. The application deadline is November 27, 2023. Check out heritageradionetwork.org and click on the Julia Child Foundation Writing Fellowship link to learn more. If you or someone you know has interest in food studies and journalism, this might be a great fit. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and check out the application today. Thank you.
One, welcome to the show, Miami Drive. Welcome, Julio and Michelle.
Hello.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Tiffany. Hi, Tiffany.
I'm not in it.
You're not in it, but I'm you're here to eat pizza.
You should.
Fanny, can you be considered potential muse?
Definitely.
Oh, definitely. Actually, permanent love, I think. The music came from how I felt about Tiffany.
Aww.
We had recently met, and then that happened, and then Michelle wrote some amazing lyrics to it. There we have it.
Blushing over pizza, I see.
Tears in heaven.
Tears in heaven. So welcome and shout out to Andrew Raposa for another great curated band thrown our way. That man.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that guy.
Best bass face in Brooklyn.
Definitely.
Yes. Six years in a row? Seven, I don't know. I've lost count now.
Something like that.
So welcome, guys. So talk to me about how you got started, how you two met.
Michelle's husband, now husband, Ari Kushner, he, at the time I've always been, my first musical influence is jazz, and I was playing the sax a whole bunch for most of my upbringing. And, then I got into, you know, like as most jazz musicians, then you get into things like Fruity Loops and, Ableton and, all that kind of thing, Reason. And so I started making some electronic music. And Ari's like, you know, you should come out sometime and meet this girl, Michelle. She's just getting into singing, and she plays the guitar, and she has a few songs that maybe you would be interested in trying to produce. And I never took him up on that offer. I never went to meet them, but eventually he had to bring her to my parents' house. I was like, this is Michelle, and let's. I mean, pretty much, because
wow.
I think we met once where Ari was DJing at. That place, what's it?
The Raleigh Hotel.
The Raleigh Hotel.
Oh, yeah.
So it just happened, and she had some songs that were really nice, and we started to pretty much arrange them together, and I started producing them a bit. And that's how we met. We met through
Actually,
Ari, the guy that's out there taking pictures.
Oh, is that your husband?
Uh-huh.
Come on in. We got a seat.
Yeah.
Man, it's just a room full of love today.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Room full of love. So you guys met, and wait, you said the Raleigh, down in Miami?
Yeah, we're both from Miami, okay. And, you know, hence the name, and it's our biggest influence.
Wow.
Is the city.
I mean, meeting her forced on you at your parents' house in Miami is like, I mean, I don't know if you're Jewish, but that is the classic Jewish love story.
It wasn't so, it happened, yeah, it was, I was not going out at that time in my life, I don't think so much.
Awesome.
I'm still pretty much a
homebody.
Yeah.
All right. That's cool. So you had some songs, and you guys started collaborating, and how instantaneously did you both think that this was going to be a good fit?
Pretty soon, I think. I think my concept was I wanted to work with a child, actually. A voice that was very innocent sounding, and I think Michelle was just really getting into it at that time. It was something that you hadn't been doing for...
No,
too long, right?
I had just started, actually. So my voice kind of resembled a child at that time, so it worked out pretty well. The initial songs were very romantic, very melodic, very sweet, and so it worked really well. And we still try to maintain that now,
yeah.
But the music's evolved so much in the last couple of years.
Yeah, there's definitely an innocence that we try to maintain in the production and her voice, in some way, like the balance of the synthesizers being strong, and then her voice being what the synthesizers are trying to protect from, I don't know, whatever the world.
All right, let's hear one.
Let's hear a song, because I'm very intrigued now.
Okay, should we play
one
live?
Love it.
I'm gonna love it.
You
I mean, I already love it. But yeah, let's play. Let's hear. Let's rip a tune.
So all right.
I don't know if you guys really rip your tunes, but let's rip a tune.
Let's do it. No, I need this. Okay, let's.
All right, here we go. Miami Drive, live on Snacky Tunes.
Woo!
Oh man!
Awesome!
I really wanted to be in some back room with a light up disco floor, like 4 a.m. during that track.
Awesome!
Yeah.
Me too.
Oh, that got real. That was pretty grown, sexy.
It really is.
A lot of adult love going on there.
Nice.
So you guys are from Miami?
Yes. Born and raised. Well, I'm born and raised. Julio was born in Nicaragua, right?
I was born in Nicaragua, but I moved to Miami when I was 3, so I grew up
just
there.
By yourself?
Yeah.
No, that's cool, man.
My parents.
Yeah, dude, Nicaragua, this scene's dead.
Live in Miami. Out of here.
And you guys never met growing up, but I mean, I assume good food growing up, though?
Yes, very good food. My family is half Colombian, half Cuban, so very Latin-based.
All right.
Yeah, Nicaraguan food, I mean, Cuban food is, I think, what binds us. I'm a big, when I go to Miami, I go directly to a Cuban bakery.
Can you let me know where you can actually get a good Cuban sandwich in Miami?
Definitely. There's a
because I family there, and everyone takes me to these places, and I'm like, these are all crap. I'm at the point now where I'm like, well, maybe there is not this ethereal Cuban sandwich. Mm-hmm. That exists. Maybe they're just not as good, but I don't believe that's the case.
No,
I think the ones in Miami are just the more sort of simple idea of a Cuban. Yeah, simple idea.
Right.
I feel like the sort of evolution of the Cuban sandwich, they've just made it better.
Like using artisanal meats and things like that.
Exactly. So like when you go down to Miami, you go to like a typical like Cuban place.
Yeah.
It's not
in the hood, pretty much. That's where you find the best sandwiches.
It's fine.
I lived in a place called Sweetwater, which is mostly Nicaraguans, but at first it was all Cubans, and there are a few places there that are cheap, tiny, but everything is just perfect. Everyone that works here actually just got there from Cuba a few months ago, that kind of thing, you know.
You know, I'm not familiar with Nicaraguan food. What's that like?
It's really simple as well. It's a lot of sauces. Like, we love our chimichurri, for instance, skirt steak with chimichurri, some rice and beans combined, which we call gallo pinto, and then we have, you know, like plantains in any form, you know, mashed or
actually
fried.
Growing up, my family and I used to go down to Bayside and eat at Los Ranchos, and which was Nicaraguan every Sunday night.
Really?
Nice. Yes.
That's one of the it's a chain now.
Is it a chain?
Yeah. Now there's like three, but there was one in the Nicaraguan neighborhood, and it became very popular. And then they opened up one at Bayside, which was it's like a huge touristy, you know, place. But yeah, that place still has. I mean, the food is still good there.
So. Tiff, are you getting the benefits of a home-cooked Nicaraguan meal?
Oh, yes, I am.
Yeah?
Oh, my God. Julio is I call him the meat master, which is a disgusting term if your mind goes there.
It did.
But we're just specifically talking
about really sweet of you, baby.
How he can marinate all kinds of delicious meat and make amazing sauces.
Wow.
He's an incredible chef.
I don't know.
You're really modest. That's totally fine.
It's experimentation constantly. You know, like my dad was that kind of guy who would just throw 10 things in a pot, and then magically, there was a potion there. And it's like, wow.
Was it magic, though, or was it like controlled madness?
You're right. I think. Actually, maybe more of the controlled madness, actually, now that I think about it.
Where you're going, like, what am I looking at here, Dad?
He's like, you're gonna love it. Just be quiet.
Yeah.
I think he loved it.
That's amazing. Do you cook?
I do. Mm, I do. Yes.
She's an amazing chef.
That was actually my first passion. I did the opposite. I went food first, then music.
Okay. But do you feel that you're bringing the same sort of passion and skills to your approach to music as you did for food?
Yes, definitely. It's very intense.
Very intense?
Yes. I spend long hours cooking. I'm like more of a slow cook. I could spend all day doing it.
I'm halfway through a tomato jam right now.
Very nice.
That I got started, but I had to turn the heat off because I had to come to a radio show. It's like a 3 or 4 hour process.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to be up to midnight cooking it. It's really good. Food 52, tomato jam, search the recipe.
Cool.
It's
awesome.
It's so good.
Awesome.
Another track? Another song?
Sure,
sure.
All right, what do you want to hit us with? Something with some Cubano flavor?
This one is definitely very Miami freestyle, so this is
the tinge of that.
Okay.
It's called House Party.
Oh, House Party. So first track off the EP, right?
Yes.
Awesome. Well, here we go, live on Snacky Tunes. Once again, we have Miami Drive.
Nice.
Woo! Ow!
So sassy. A little freestyle right there at the end. A little wild style.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So let's talk about the EP. Super fun. Super great. Super summer jams. When did that drop? Has it dropped?
It's actually, we've just released the first single, House Party, which is the one you just heard. The rest of the EP will probably come out in the fall. We're working on a music video right now.
Ooh.
Yeah, which is going to be...
Yeah.
Pretty epic, I hope.
Who's making it?
We're keeping it internal for now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Should be a nice surprise for everyone.
Yes, definitely.
All right.
But very, very Miami influence, I would say, and part of our upbringing, which is novelas, one of our biggest influences in our music making is the Spanish novela.
Really?
Just in all its glory and not glory, but the humor that you capture from it, with it being so serious, and that's something that I feel like in music I love. You know,
is the video going to be like open shirt, wax chest type of thing?
it might be. Yeah.
It might go there. We might end up there.
It might go there.
Very emotional.
Yeah, I'm a pretty terrible actress, so I feel like it'll really come through perfectly in this sort of novela theme. It'll come it'll make the most sense. It's like my debut, my terrible acting debut.
Are you excited? Excited for your close-up?
I am, yes. Thank you.
tons of close-ups, yeah.
So the EP is coming out in the fall. Who's putting it out?
We don't have a label yet. We've been shopping it around.
That seems like a mistake by the music industry.
We have some options right now, so.
Okay. It's good to have options.
Yeah, definitely.
Good to have options.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Yeah. And then tour?
Well, yeah, that's something that we want to really do coming up maybe next fall when we drop the EP. And
we
stuff
have
and
actually a show things. Coming up August 29th with Midnight Magic, which is pretty cool.
Let
Friday.
Me just check.
If you
August 29th?
Schedule. August 29th.
Yeah, I'll be there.
Nice.
Sweet.
I have a wedding the next day, but I'll be there.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to make it to the wedding now, though.
I know. That's the thing, because Miami Drive, you guys start at like... 1 in the morning, maybe 1:30.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah. That's a late show.
That is late. Late yeah.
Is this another cameo special?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Duh.
Gotta
hey, shout out to Jiffy, who just got married.
Definitely.
Ooh, shout out to Jiffy. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Jiffy and Mary.
Jiffy. Jiffy, really, that place. Every time I go in there.
I know.
He really just turned that. Do you remember when it was just that, like, half room?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's now, like, a proper...
Yeah. And he made the sound. The sound in there is great now.
Dude, Simeon Mobile Disco played there the other day.
I know.
Really?
Simeon.
That's so crazy.
Played there. And it was awesome. It was awesome.
He's continuing the golden age of that era. I remember, like, you know, Coco 66, for instance, had a certain sweaty room in the back, and then that never really
He's the last standing Brooklyn sweaty room.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, look, now that there is, like, Output and Verboten, but it's
that's the place right there.
For live bands and stuff, yeah.
What, for Cameo?
Yeah, and for DJs as well. It's just the sound system has gotten better and better.
And you just
feel like you could be in any other era.
Oh, it's so good.
The present, right? It
just basement is like,
oh yeah,
touch me in the basement type of vibe.
Yes.
But in the good way. In the super good way.
Definitely.
Touch me in the basement.
Yeah. If that's not a new Midnight Magic song, I don't know what is.
No.
Send that back to the boys.
Touch me in the basement.
Okay,
well. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we'll have you back on because I know you guys are working on the next one, right?
Yeah, EP coming out next month too.
All right, so we'll get
you. Not about us. It's about Miami Drive.
I know. I know. All right, so Miami Drive. I want to make sure that we have enough time for one more song. So, where can people find you? Instagram, Twitter. What's your Instagram game? Good, strong.
We've actually. It's one of those things where it's been hard for us to take that as a means of promotion. Just because our personalities, I'm not necessarily a type of a bro down kind of guy, so I don't really have a large friend base, you could say, and so like Instagram has been a really hard thing to understand how to approach and use.
Food shots, pet shots,
yeah,
done. Is that
there
it?
You go.
I'm telling you.
See,
honestly, if you have a band Instagram that never posts about music and it's just great food and cute dogs,
done.
Done. Okay, we're gonna try that.
Done. And it sounds like that. I'm telling you, you put up a photo of you playing keyboards and a photo of you with skirt steak and chimichurri sauce. You see which one the boy likes. I'm telling you, I know exactly which one it is.
Awesome. The best place right now to really check us out is on SoundCloud, Miami Drive.
But is everything Miami Drive, Instagram, Twitter?
Everything, yeah. Right now, Facebook, Miami Drive Band is the full name. Okay. SoundCloud, it's just Miami Drive. And then Instagram and Twitter is also just Miami Drive straight. No hyphens or anything.
Cool. All right, well, thank you so much. Shout out to the Pit Bastard. Go to Northern. Hey, if you need dinner plans tonight, he'll be behind the grill or behind the stove.
We just had delicious pizza.
Oh, shout out to our burgers as always. Yeah. Heritage. This is our last show of the summer.
Ooh,
yeah,
awesome.
We got shit to do.
Yeah.
Both Greg and I will be out at FYF in LA next weekend. So if you see us and you're one of our four listeners, one of which maybe lives in LA, come say hi to us. And then we got weddings and I guess Midnight Magic, Midnight Drive show.
Miami Drive.
Miami Drive. What did I say? Midnight Drive? Midnight Drive?
It happens to me all the time as well. Oh. I mean.
All right, well, Miami Drive, what's the last song?
It's Give It Up.
All right, Give It Up. Here we go. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for an amazing summer. We will see you, and I can't believe I have to say this, we will see you in the fall.
Oof.
Where the hell did 2014 go?
I don't know.
All right. Okay. See you guys soon. Bye.
Let's do it.
cool dudes. Finger on the pulse. Snacky Tunes.
Snacky Tunes is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Subscribe.